And now for our morning's message. Out of my new tablet. Modern kids have a different kind of tablet. I have this kind of a tablet that you actually use a pencil. And as the kids would know from Wednesday night, or the kids that are in my class, they're not kids, they're, I don't know what they are, teenagers. When they're in my class, they all know that it takes me like 10 pencils to write a sermon. And they all have to be super sharp when I start. Halfway through, it's not a sermon, it's a message. Halfway through, I resharpen them. Is that better? Thank you. So, halfway through is page 15, by the way. No, I'm just kidding. So the name of this sermon or message is part 3. So if you haven't heard part 2 and part 1, you can get it on the recording, but it's kind of a culmination of the other two, but none of them have the same title, which bothers a lot of people. Part 3, and then comes the end. That wasn't the name of the other two, or one. So we've been talking about history and prophecy, and this will be the third week in a row, and the last week about this subject right now. The reason is because Israel has been heavily in the news for a bit now, and that scares people, or it scares a lot of people, thinking that the end of the world is right on us, because they see Israel in the news, and they know that Israel is a sign, and it scares a lot of people to think, you know, we see the sign now, so we better do something right now because it's about over. Then people begin to bring up these subjects like the need for Israel to have a temple before Christ can come back. There are a lot of people in that camp that believe that Israel has to have a temple before Christ can come back. They're teaching that Israel must have a temple to fulfill Matthew 24:15. Before I go there, I want to make sure this works. Oh, that's not Matthew 24:15. It's a temple. So this is a book. It's a snapshot out of this book because that's my best way to make this kind of a slide. It's pretty good detail. But I'm not expecting you to read it all because it's pretty fine, even projected on the wall. But this shows, and this book has a lot of information, which I'm going to leave sitting around like when we're eating and stuff that you can look at if you want. Just don't eat on it. There's a lot of information about the history of the temple all through its beginning. And as you can see that there's a dot right there. That's traditionally the place where Abraham offered Isaac way back when. And as you can see, that's a location of all these different temples and where it is now in this day. These different lines are different ages of time or different sects of time. Like this one underneath the rock, the first temple or tabernacle was portable. The Israelites took it around with them in the desert. But when they finally got a king, and the third king was able to build it, the king of Israel, Solomon. Solomon's temple was built there, and that rock was in the Holy of Holies in the temple. So there was one spot in the temple where no one could go except once a year, the Holy of Holies. That's where that rock was. Traditionally, that's what's believed. So then Herod, around the time of a little BC, a handful BC, not that many BC, built this bigger temple for the Jews. And then around 600 AD, the Muslims killed everybody and took it and made it into a Muslim mosque. This is called the Dome of the Rock. And it's still there now. It's the oldest building in Islam. It was built like 670 AD. So it's pretty good old, 2,000 years old. I wonder if their roofing warranty is done by now. Maybe, maybe not, I'm not sure. But, so down here is where it is now, and this is how Jerusalem is. But it still has Muslim control in the form of the Dome of the Rock. That's what they call it, the Dome of the Rock. That's the rock, because they believe in Ishmael instead of Isaac. And in the 1967 war that Israel defeated this area, they took control of this area, and they had control of what the temple site was in 1967. But because there was so much contention, like there is right now at the colleges, with the Jews and the Muslims, I want to say. I don't want to say Arab. I don't know if that's the Arabs or the Muslims. Most of the Arabs are Muslims, but it's two religions, the Jews and the Muslims. They made a deal to let the Muslims retain this part of the temple ground, but they kept control of the Western Wall, which they call the Wailing Wall now. So in a trade, Israel's so bad, in a trade for peace, they decided to let the Muslims retain possession of the Dome of the Rock, which would have been their prized possession because it's the holy part of the temple. But right now it's in Muslim control ever since 600 AD. That has nothing to do with the sermon. That's just a little bit of history about the temple. And there's a lot in this book about it if you want to look at it later. So, I was talking about Matthew 24:15, why people believe that Israel needs to have a temple before Christ can come back. Here's what Matthew 24:15 says. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolations, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, let the reader understand. They read this verse and say that this means there must be a temple before Christ can come back. The red heifer would have to do with cleansing the people to build that temple. There are always rumors that Israel has been constructing that temple in pieces privately for a fast and surprising assembly. All of a sudden, there it is. Just so it could be desecrated to fulfill that verse. That would be a teaching of a large percent of modern Christians. I'll say that. So if you don't know, I mean, you're coming into part three if you're new, sorry. But you heard the first one. But you can go back to the recordings if you're interested to know what led up to this one today. So a large percent of modern Christians are teaching that. So let's take a look at Matthew 24 and see what it does say. And pay attention, there's a lot of stuff to keep track of here. You can always use the recording to go back if you got missed, if you're not a note taker. If you're a note taker, you're going to be probably taking some notes. So we're going to compare Matthew 24 and Luke 21. They may be the same account recorded by two different people, Matthew the IRS agent and Dr. Luke. So the guy that wrote Matthew was a tax guy. The guy that wrote Luke was a doctor. So I wish I knew the effect that the gospel writer's profession had on their recording view of the life of Jesus. I can't know if it changes the way it was intended. I can only go by what it says. So Matthew 24, 1 through 3. It says, Jesus came out of the temple and was going away when his disciples came up to point out the temple buildings to him. He said to them, "Do you not see all these things?" This is Jesus talking to them. "Truly I say to you, not one stone here will be left upon another which will not be torn down." He was sitting on the Mount of Olives. The disciples came to him privately saying, "Tell us, when will these things happen, and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age?" In another picture, it shows where the Mount of Olives is compared to that site that's in this book. So you can kind of see what they were looking at. It also shows a pretty good depiction of what the temple was. It wasn't just the building. There were a lot of other buildings around it. And that's what they're mentioning here, the temple and the temple buildings. So realize that this text is, or was recorded, the third day of Jesus' last week before his crucifixion. And he's answering all these questions, and he's on his way to be crucified, and they're asking him stuff like this, but they don't know. So this is right up close to the time that he would be crucified. His disciples seem to have three questions here. When will these things happen? What will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? Seems like it's three questions. You could say it's two, but sounds like three. Now Luke. Luke 21, 5 through 7 says, well, some were talking about the temple. This is, I think, the same account. It was adorned with beautiful stones and votive gifts. He said, as for these things which you are looking at, the days will come in which there will not be left one stone upon another which will not be torn down. They questioned him, saying, teacher, when therefore will these things happen, and what will be the sign when these things are about to take place? It seems like the disciples had two questions here. And the second question is, what will be the sign when these things are about to take place, talking about the stones being torn down? Both Matthew and Luke's accounts begin with noticing the temple and how beautiful it is and the other buildings that are all around it. And Jesus spends some time, if you look at Matthew 24 and Luke 21, he spends some time answering their question, the question that they had. And he gives a clue in verse 15 as to what he's talking about. And we'll read this next slide up to that point. It's Matthew 4, 2, 24, 4 through 15. Jesus, this is right after they pointed out the buildings and he said they're all going to be torn down. Jesus answered them and said, see to it that no one misleads you, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will mislead many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See to it that you're not frightened, for those things must take place, but that is not yet the end. That was the name of the title. Then comes the end. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and in various places there will be famines and earthquakes, but all these things are merely the beginning of birth pangs. I don't know what birth pangs are like, but I know what kidney stones are like, and I hear they're similar. So when you hear these things and see these things happen, it's just the beginning that will last for a while. But then they will deliver you to tribulation, and they will kill you, and you will be hated by all nations because of my name. At that time, you will fall away and will betray one another and hate one another. Many false prophets will arise and will mislead many. Because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end, he will be saved. This gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come. And that's the name of it. Then comes the end. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolations, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, let the reader understand. That's where I had a problem. Matthew 24:15 used to haunt me. Let the reader understand. When you see the abomination of desolations happen, spoken of through Daniel in the holy place, how can I understand? It says, let the reader understand. I can't understand that. What is this let the reader understand business? That's not even a verse. It says, let the reader understand. So I'm a reader and I'm not understanding. And then I would go back to Daniel and read Daniel and then Matthew. I would go back and forth. What's going on here? I'm not understanding. I would read it and read it and read it and read it and read it. Remember, I have told you before, school is not my strong point. You probably remember that. So all of my schooling was like my knowledge of Greek mythology. It was my Achilles elbow. So some of my not understanding, I find out now, was I was listening to all those around me talking about the abomination of desolations. And how that is a thing in the future, even for us now. it is some kind of event where the Antichrist does something horrible in the temple. And I was trying to figure out what a desolation could be. What can happen that the Antichrist can do that is a desolation? I couldn't make that work because that's a different kind of a word. It's not a thing like sacrificing a pig on the altar or something like that. You hear about things like that. So a lot of people think that the 70th week is still to come. 69 weeks are over, but that last one didn't happen yet. So me, with my pea-sized brain, trying to get this let the reader understand thing figured out, it never made sense to me that the temple would have to do with the return of Christ. It just never made sense. Remember when we did the covenants? Jesus' ministry was the end of the Noah covenant and the beginning of the new covenant. That's part of the reason. That's what I was talking about before when I would say concept. The church began with Jesus, and once there's a church, Israel's kind of like in the dust, left in the dust. He had that new covenant, Jesus did. I think I got that concept down, that Christianity does not have a brick-and-mortar temple. Does it? We don't go to the temple and do whatever it is. Christianity doesn't have a brick-and-mortar temple. And then I remembered, my pea-sized brain remembered this, the veil that shielded the Holy of Holies, the most important part of the temple, tore in half from top to bottom at Christ's death. Do you remember that in the story? Christ died, it got dark out, lightning was going around, and the veil tore in half from top to bottom. And it was supposed to be like this thick of cloth. I think it tore from top first to show that it was from God, not man. It was torn from above. It exposed the Holy of Holies. The temple is now obsolete. Anybody can go in there now. The door's been opened. So that shows me that the temple is over, or so over nowadays. The temple is so over. Christianity doesn't have it. In fact, the Jews don't have it. The Muslims have it right now, or at least the location for it. There was nothing in Matthew or Luke about 7 years or 3.5 years. Why are the people telling me this stuff? Well, maybe they don't understand. Let the reader understand. Because I was trying to fit all those things into Matthew and Luke, and it just wasn't fitting for me. So then I have to think of a little bit of an approach. Now I think I'm beginning to understand the let the reader understand. And this forces me back to Daniel to understand. It's like a ping pong match. I know Terry loves ping pong, like 100 mile an hour ping pong. And Matthew, Daniel. I don't know who's winning, but that's how it was, trying to study out and figure out how to understand the understanding, let the reader understand. So I asked my class Wednesday night, this past Wednesday, what they thought about last week's message, which was about Daniel 9:24. It was only about that one verse. And Alex, happy birthday, Alex and Ben, by the way, didn't know what I was getting at in last week's message, which was good. Not that it was good, but I'm glad he said that. And he was confused. So Alex and the rest of you that didn't get it, here's my thumbnail version of what went on the whole time last week. We talked about Daniel 9:24 only, because it has the accomplishments of the 7 years in it. That's why. The fact that 490 years have been decreed by God through Gabriel, remember the angel told Daniel, for the Jews in Jerusalem. There were six things mentioned in verse 24 that needed to be accomplished to complete the 490-year period. So, I gave two scriptures, examples of scripture, to show each of those six things have been accomplished. And remember, pretty much every one of them was at the cross. Therefore, the 70 weeks are over. according to the scriptures. What about that person that says, wait, hold on there. It might be Jeff talking to me later on today, maybe. We still have that last week in the future. But I was saying just a second ago that I think the 70 weeks are over. We have 7 years or 2 3.5-year periods left. Well, I think we need to look at the verses we didn't cover about the 70 weeks last week. So this is what was up last week, and we only talked about verse 24. So I gave you verses to show where each of those things were fulfilled in verse 24. So that's what the 70 weeks is all about, those things being fulfilled. Okay, so then there are three more verses I didn't get to because I'm slow at my deliverance. So verse 25. This is talking about the 70 years. It's broken up. So you are to know and discern that from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah, don't forget we talked about Messiah, the prince, there will be 7 weeks and 62 weeks, it will be built again with plaza and moat, even in times of distress. So when Daniel was writing this, Babylon had just taken the city. Who else was there? Jeremiah was there. Jeremiah, the weeping prophet, they dragged him out of the city in shackles and took him to Babylon, and they destroyed the temple and everything about it. So that's where Daniel is writing this from. It's already destroyed. So he's saying 70 sevens or 490 years, it will be rebuilt. And how it will be rebuilt. So the weeks are broken into 7 weeks and 62 weeks in verse 25. A different study, not this one, because it would take way too long, would take you back from now to the times of Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther. Esther, did I say it twice? Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther. They were all the last Old Testament books written in the chronology of the writings. It's funny that they're not at the end, but that's how it is. You probably remember some of the story of Ezra and Nehemiah and the rebuilding of Jerusalem and the temple. The details and the time and construction and building conditions is a whole different thing. There's a lot of stuff. I remember, though, out of the story, reading that it required a soldier to shield each worker to deflect arrows and attacks while they were doing their work. I don't know if you remember that part, but I remember that part. I'm just imagining I'm trying to pound nails and some guy's shooting me with arrows. And it's so bad, they got to have a guard there with a board to catch the arrows. Can you imagine that, trying to work like that? And they did this for a long time. It took a long time to rebuild. I wonder what their union had to say. Hey, these guys need bigger shields. Or, you can't use sharp arrows if you're shooting them at us. I'm not sure that the union on the other side would have held up their bargain anyway. By the way, there is nothing in this text, these four verses, to imply or say that the 490 years are not consecutive. That's why it says 70 weeks or 490 years if you're going to translate it. Excuse me. Verse 26 says, then after the 62 weeks, so 7 and 62, and then after, that would be 70, right? Yeah. After 62 weeks is number 70, because you've already got 7 and 62, and that's 69. Yeah, I just did the math in my head real quick to make sure I was right. And there's 1 week left. So after that would be in the 70th week. The Messiah will be cut off, having nothing, and the people of the prince who is to come will destroy the city and the sanctuary, and its end will come with a flood. Even to the end, there will be war. Desolations are determined. I think that's where the desolation begins right here. Desolations are determined. What page is that? Who's counting? After 62 weeks, it's the 70th week. The Messiah cut off from the land of the living, crucified, and desolations are determined. Daniel got a glimpse of the words Jesus had here. Matthew 23:37-39. Here's what he said. He was sitting on the hill looking at the city. This was before he was asked about the temple buildings. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her? How often I wanted to gather chicks, because it's in here. How often I wanted to gather your children together, the way a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were unwilling. He's sitting on the hill, looking at what he wants to be his favorite place, and the people aren't doing it. They're not accepting the prophets before him. They're not accepting him. In 4 or 5 days, he'll be dead from this statement. And because of that, verse 28, behold, your house is being left to you desolate. For I say to you, from now on, you will not see me until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. It's funny that that's in there. It's not funny, but it's funny that that's in there. Not ha-ha funny, but curious to use that terminology. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Because, and that one, blessed is he who comes in the name, might be familiar to you with regarding Palm Sunday. That's what, when he was on the colt, he comes into the city, that's what they said. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Hosanna. And they put their coats on the ground and the palm branches. That was 2 days before this. So it was still in his last week of life. He sits there and prophesies that against Jerusalem. Daniel 9:26-27, see that prophecy. Desolation from abominations are warned against in the Mosaic Law. For you younger people, to rephrase, the same thing means destroyed because of sin, especially following the wrong God. It was an abomination to follow the wrong God in the eyes of God. Desolation is how God punished. So abomination means sin. Desolation means either made desolate or laid waste. I think you can grasp one of those. Kind of like leveled. For the note takers, Deuteronomy 29 and 30 cover that warning in the actual law. The whole chapter talks about what you should do, what you should not do. As part of the covenant with Moses, it even brings it up. This covenant I have made with you today. And here's some things that it says. Do not turn from God. Do not forsake the covenant. Do not commit abomination by serving other gods. Don't do it, or God will punish them. In Matthew 23, it says that your house is being left to you desolate. That's what Jesus said. And their house was the temple. That's the big deal in the realm of the Jews and Judaism. Daniel 9, verse 27. It's going to go back to, it is only verse 27. Thought it was going to have all four again. But in verse 27, it says, and he will make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week. In the middle of the week, he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering. And on the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate, even until a complete destruction, one that is decreed is poured out on the one who makes desolate. A lot of stuff, theories and different teachings around these four verses in Daniel 24-27. And it's very much different one from the next. So on the wing of abominations, It says that in the middle of the verse. On the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate. The meaning of the translation of wing is widespread. It's not, I always thought it was like an arm, but it isn't. It means like a chicken covering up her chickens. It goes all the way to the edge of the chickens. Another description was hem to hem, talking about a garment. From this hem to this hem, it was everywhere. It was widespread, all the way to the edges. So the abominations was big. It was covering everybody. No one was wanting to follow God or keep Moses' law or protect his prophets, even Jesus. You could see what happened to him. So Israel's abomination of rejecting Jesus and the prophets was too much. It resulted in desolation. Jerusalem being laid waste is not part of the 70 weeks. You remember in verse 24, it talks about these things to accomplish the 70 weeks. Desolation is not in that list. They're all things about bringing in everlasting righteousness and all the things, good things that Christ accomplished on the cross. All of them refer to Christ either dying or being resurrected. All six things. So Jerusalem being laid waste is not part of the 70 weeks that we had in verse 24. It's after. In 70 AD, to be exact, maybe 30 years after Jesus is sitting on the mountain talking about Jerusalem, oh Jerusalem, it's almost like, why hast thou forsaken me? But he's talking to the city that you're destroying all the things that God wants you to have, and you'll be desolated. It was a sad moment for him, not a happy one. Titus of Rome came and his men, and they burned and dismantled the temple all the way down. I've read some of the accounts that Josephus wrote. He was a historian that was a Jew that was hired by the Romans to record what the Jews were going through. And that's what he did. And there's a lot of archaeological things that show him to be a pretty upright, upstanding, the truth kind of a man. And he describes some of the things, how they burned the temple, where the people were and stuff like that. And by the time it was done, not a stone was left stacked. In regards to the abomination of desolation, how much of Matthew 24 and Luke 21, all of those signs mentioned, you can look at those two chapters, and there's a lot of stuff mentioned. How much of that is a warning of the coming of Titus for the disciples, to the disciples, and the early church workers? In Luke 21:20, which is pretty good into the chapter, it says, "But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then recognize her desolation is near." There was Jesus' words. But way down in the chapter at verse 20, when you see this happening, you see Titus and his men pull up. It's not going to go well. And it's really a fulfillment of Daniel 9, 26, and 27. This one is just 27 because it mentions a complete destruction. The verse before does too, verse 26. So as far as I believe, Daniel 9, 24 through 27 is all completed by 70 AD. And the 70 weeks before that, because, hey, where's my other slide? Let me see if it's after this one. It is. This slide is supposed to be in there. So in Daniel 9, 26 and 27, it talks about the middle of the week. The sin was stopped, the offerings were stopped. That top parenthesis is the first 3.5 years of Jesus before the cross. That's his ministry. He began it by preaching the kingdom of God, Matthew 4. Each book has the beginning of Jesus actually beginning his ministry. He had his ministry for 3.5 years. He was crucified. In the middle, he was cut off having nothing. And then the next 3.5 years, the gospel message was only for the Jews. And Christians weren't really the thing yet, because it says in the scripture that it was to the Jew first. Some people might think that means the first covenant and then the second covenant is different. But the new covenant was to the Jews first. There's a bunch of verses here that you could get from the recording if you wanted to look them up. But these are some things that happened at the end of the 7 years. You have Peter's vision. You remember the vision he had of the sheet that was let down and the things that were on it? He said, eat. And he said, no, I can't eat that. It's unclean. Well, he said, eat. And they argued back and forth, and finally he said, okay, I'll do it. But it's a symbolizing that the Jewish ways are over. But now it's a new thing. It's a new law. It's a new covenant, which began 7 years earlier. He made that agreement for the Jews to have salvation, but they refused it. They rejected him. They crucified him. They did that in the middle of the week. The conversion of Cornelius, a note around the conversion of Cornelius is that when Cornelius was converted, then the gospel went to the Jews, or the gospel went to the Gentiles, I'm sorry, not the Jews. There's leaving the Jews, going to the Gentiles. In Acts 13, I think the 46 through 49, that's where Paul gets the call saying, now you are going to be the light to the Gentiles. That's the 3.5 years after the crucifixion. Remember, Paul was, in the life of Christ, was an antagonist, actually being present when the early Christians were killed. He was an antagonist. So by the time the gospel was offered to the Gentiles, he had been converted in that time. And 3.5 years after the cross, the gospel is open to the Gentiles. As far as I believe, the 70 weeks are over, so there is not a 7-year period left to be fulfilled out of Daniel 9. I'm not saying that things don't happen still. I'm saying the Daniel 9 scenario has no seven-year period left. In Luke 21:24, it says, Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. So Jerusalem has a new master now until that time is up. Romans 11:25 says, a partial hardening has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles has come in. Romans 11:11 says, by their transgressions, the Jews, salvation has come to the Gentiles. So that's a big thing. If the Jews didn't reject it, where would we be? They did reject it, so we know where we are. But things could have gone different. They didn't. So in closing, I have Matthew 24:44 to say about the return of Christ. It says, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour when you do not think he will. The end. So, we are looking forward to that day. And let's close our service this morning by turning to number 511. There's a great day coming. 511.